Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Sunday for Sunday, March 24th, 2024. We've got another great show for you this week. David Levine, Kevin Walsh of the Groom Law Group are here. They're going to be breaking down the $1.2 trillion budget. Anything in there for retirement? You're going to have to stick around to check that out. And then we'll be taking a look back at a recent show on BRN AM. We had Dr. Robin Berkland of the University of Minnesota School of Public Health talking about the transition of a spouse or partner to long-term care. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode of BRN Sunday. Well, we are going to kick off the show as we always do with a look at what's happening on Capitol Hill. A lot going on these days. Joining us on the line, David Levine, Kevin Walsh. Both are principals with Groom Law Group. That's an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C. We fondly refer to them as the Legal Eagles. Eagles, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this week.
Jeff, as always, it's great to be here. And we're going big picture. And if we're going big picture, that means budget and Social Security. So let's dive in.
Yeah, Kevin, let's start with you. And let's talk about this budget passage. A lot of talk in the popular press about the budget. And what's the latest on the U.S. federal budget?
So the federal budget is really kind of the you know, it's supposed to be annual opportunity for sausage making. And by that, it's you know, the biggest must pass the bill of all, because at bottom, if you don't pass these spending packages, then you know, then we see shutdowns. And I say it's supposed to be once a year because we do have this trend of using continuing resolutions, which are short term fixes where it's, you know, we don't know what we want to do for this year's budget yet. So let's extend last year's budget, last year's funding level, for a couple more weeks. And that's been going on now for a while. And now, you know, this past week in March, Congress finally got together, the House and Senate. They've agreed to a full spending package. So now this bill, it's the budget for this year. It takes us all the way from essentially now, we'll call it April. It takes us from April into September, full year spending package. And that suggests kind of they're significantly behind schedule on it. Now, in terms of the retirement space, you know, the Department of Labor is going to get $145 million cut from the last fiscal year. So they're going to get $13.7 billion. In terms of the retirement regulator themselves, so the Employee Benefit Security Administrator, their budget's flat. It's frozen from fiscal 2023. So it's going to stay at $191 million. Now, in light of inflation and things, that a flat budget amounts to somewhat of a cut. So you know, we wouldn't expect to see much growth in the agency this year. The other thing that you look for when there's a budget package passed is, you know, are there, do they stuff the Christmas tree full of ornaments? Mm-hmm. And by that, you know, do they put policy riders on? Do they put, you know, specific programs in? And in terms of the retirement space, there was a lot of talk that folks were going to try to put in place riders dealing with some of the policy decisions that EBSA had been making. Now, in this final budget, you know, when the House and the Senate got together, they did not include any of the policy riders. So, you know, right now, you know, EBSA hasn't been given more instruction from Congress on how to spend the money. But Congress has signaled, you know, you're not doing such a great job that we want to give you more money. On the other hand, you know, you're not doing such a terrible job that we're going to take money away from you.
Wow, that's a interesting analysis. So Kevin, before I go to David, I mean, I guess Secure 3.0, actually, Secure Technical Corrections, let's talk about that for a second, because that's something that I know that's work that has to be done. That's Congress, but there's probably a component there for the regulators to weigh in on. Forgetting future retirement legislation, let's talk about technical corrections for a minute. Do they have the resources at both of the Department of Labor and the IRS to put forth the regs around what a lot of providers and people are waiting for?
So, you know, the Department of Labor has been working pretty, you know, they've had a robust regulatory project going on for a few years now. There's a number of things that Congress has told them to get regs out on. There's also a number of things that Congress has told them, you know, where Congress hasn't weighed in on. And, you know, it doesn't seem like it's really a resource decision, but a priority decision at the moment in terms of, you know, getting Secure 2.0 guidance out. You know, if you listen to the folks at EBSA, there's other things that they view as more important than getting some of that guidance out. And so I think we'll have to wait and see. You know, there's nothing in this budget that says, EBSA, shift your priorities back to the congressionally mandated deadlines. So, you know, I think we'll still be waiting for some of these corrections.
David?
And Jeff, I'm going to try something simple. Yes, they have. I'm going to try something as lawyers we normally don't do. I'm going to answer the question directly.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
Yes, they have the resources to get it done if they want to.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Kevin. David, I want to pivot to you because one of the things that, you know, as I curate the news every day and, you know, watch my television or my device, Social Security has been coming up more and more. Is it going to be there? Is it going to be funded? Am I going to lose a benefit? What's going to happen? And I figured I would bring it up with you and Kevin because I want to cut to the chase and hear what's going on. I'm not interested in the politics. Our audience is not interested in the politics of it. But if you could just distill down kind of what the current events are around Social Security and what we should be watching out for as an audience.
Well, today is, I guess, my Straight Talk Express days because I want to because I'm first going to one other thing you asked that we didn't answer already. Technicals, yes or no out of Congress. You know, the budget has taken priority. And the question of what is a technical, we saw the draft release. So there's hope that there'll be technicals at some point this year, but I wouldn't bank on anything specific moving on the technicals. I just want to specifically answer that. But on Social Security, what we've seen, and again, we're going to stay out of the politics. We are still in the world where we have a Social Security retirement age of age 67 for most people who are approaching, for most people, obviously it phased in a while back. The reality is there have been discussions like this week that there were parts of the Republican Party that came out and talked about potentially raising Social Security retirement age. The Democrats, of course, jumped on the other side. But where we stand right now is Social Security continues to grow. There is a recognition that the so-called Social Security Trust Fund, which is really kind of like a file cabinet full of IOUs, at some point is going to go negative. You're basically not going to be able to actually have money set aside for Social Security. So become more pay as you go in a lot of ways. In some ways it is already. But the impact of this is it could have impacts on budget deficits and everything. So this conversation is going to ebb and flow. But until we hit a moment, and I do think we will have that moment at some point, where the parties are sort of more in a deal-making and sort of compromise mode between everybody. I think it's going to be a while before we see anything that really moves on Social Security.
And Kevin, I want to bring you into the conversation, but kind of tee it up and say, you know, obviously it's an election year. There's a lot, it's, I guess, quote unquote, at stake for the parties. Just like there wasn't going to be a lot of retirement legislation that was going to get added to bills. This one maybe just be all talk. Sounds like listening to David, all talk and just political fodder rather than actual doing.
Yeah. So 2024 is not going to be the year that Social Security is reformed.
No. I concur with my wise colleague.
Oh, good. Thank you for that. That was great. In fact, I think I'm going to use that for the name of the show. Social Security will not be reformed. Anyway, go ahead, Kevin. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
I think that's the short form. You look at, we've got a November election coming up and Social Security is a really important and nuanced policy. It's a great program that provides benefits to seniors. It's a bit of a hydra where, you know, it's become expensive over time and folks who are contributing to it feel like they're contributing enough. People who are receiving benefits think that their benefits shouldn't be cut. And then folks who are nearing benefits don't want to be told that they have to defer benefits and work longer. And so when you've got a program that has kind of three knobs and all three knobs have, there's a lot of pressure on them, it's pretty tough to come up with a solution, particularly in election season where whatever proposal you come up with is probably going to be reduced to a soundbite by the other side.
Yeah. And Kevin, I got to say before we sign off, Hydra, did you play Dungeons and Dragons by any chance when you were younger?
A little bit.
Okay. Cause I'm a big D&D guy. David Levine, Kevin Walsh, always a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for taking a tour around the Capitol, and we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff, and thank you, listeners.
Bye, thanks, gentlemen. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Welcome back. On Monday, I sat down with Dr. Robin Berkland of the University of Minnesota School of Public Health to discuss research on the transition of a spouse or partner to long-term care. Let's give that one a listen.
Dr. Berkland, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and look, this is a really important topic that I think a lot of families, spouses, partners, but also family members facing that dreaded decision to put a loved one or have a loved one go into long-term care. You and the team did a lot of research around this. How big of a deal is this for individuals?
Our research was about after they had moved into long-term care. But even before that, we know from other research that it is a very big decision. It is one that is often made under crises. And so that makes it even a harder decision. And the crisis could be anything from something happening to the care recipient, to a health issue for the caregiver who then can no longer provide care. And say you break a leg and you end up in the hospital, now you can't provide care. And it's like, well, we have to figure out something and we have to figure out something fast. So I'm just going to jump to a piece of advice. But one thing to think about in advance is if that were to happen, what would you do? And to plan for it in case it does, as far as going to look at different residential care centers and trying to figure out, there's a lot of different things that go into that decision, but just do you like it? What is the atmosphere like? What do the residents there look like? Are they happy? Are they engaged? Are the people who work there interacting with them and kind of just like that feel for it? But to have that idea of what you might do before you get in the situation where it has to happen is a much better place to be in than to have it be forced upon you and then just have to kind of go with whatever you can quickly come up with as a place for your loved one to move to.
Yeah. And this is, again, we're going to talk more about the transition, but I just wanted to really set that up because this is a really big change for couples and partners, et cetera. Let's talk about that transition because according to the research, it's a fraughtful, it can be frightening both for the transitioner, the person going into the long-term care facility. But I also think that the other partner, the partner kind of left behind, if you will, or staying at home, that's frightening as well.
It is. I mean, it's a complete change in your daily routine. It's a change in your identity. It's a change in just how other people are supportive of you. A lot of times when your care recipient moves to long-term care, there's just kind of this lack of support. Then before maybe people were stopping by helping out, but now they're thinking, well, they're care recipients in long-term care. So they have, all day to do whatever they want. And they kind of fall back a little bit in that care, but there's in the care for the caregiver, but the caregiver still is providing a lot of care, even if the person is living in long-term care. It's not like your caregiving role stops. You may not be doing those same daily logistical, making sure they get their medication and dressing and all that, but what you're doing is kind of like being an advocate for them, being their voice, being a monitor, and seeing like is what the care they're supposed to be provided, is that what they're getting? You're basically their you're the expert on them, and so you're telling their caregivers, the professional caregivers, what their preferences are, what they enjoy, who they are as a person, so that they can get the best care, they can get more cooperation, they can get like an actual relationship, and it's not just the resident who lives in room 14. It's, this is John, and this is what this is who he's always been, and this is what he always takes his showers at night. Well, maybe that they can put that into their routine to give him a shower at night, because if they try in the morning, they may not be getting that cooperation and he may be miserable. And, you know, we're trying to make everyone life have a better quality of life and do better where they're at. So, it's a constant caregiving. It's just now their care recipient is in a different setting.
Yeah. I want to talk about it for a minute, and then we'll go to a commercial break, because I want to talk about some best practices. But from the perspective of the long-term care facility, there's a lot that they need to do to facilitate an easy transition. Because again, there are things that they should be doing. You mentioned learning about the caregiving or the care recipient, I guess is how to phrase it properly. But they need to kind of help with transitioning. Are they prepared to do that in general? I mean, you can't speak for everyone, but caregiving, in, I would say, generally speaking, we have a lack of caregivers. People that work in these facilities, they're traditionally understaffed, underfunded. It's hard these days to find a caregiver.
Absolutely, and that has been something. We started the study we were working on before COVID, and so then we've seen like what has happened with the workforce during COVID and after, but even before, it's always, like you said, it's understaffed. They're not paid well. There's a lot of transition in who's working there, a lot of turnover. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's necessarily well set up, but I will say that the industry knows this, and the aging field knows this, and are really trying to figure out different ways to get more professional caregivers and more training, and just to kind of build that career up so that it is something that people are actively trying to seek out. They should, back to your original question, I would hope that most, but a good care facility will have an interview process at the beginning of the transition into long-term care to find out about that person, and to make sure that their new resident to know all the little details. But sometimes they don't, and sometimes they don't have the manpower, even if it's part of their process, they just don't have the ability. And sometimes it's not, you know, it's with certain people, but then other people or certain employees, but then they leave because of that turnover. And then you need to have other employees learn about them. So you're, as a caregiver, even if you do have that interview and have given the information, you constantly need to be talking to whoever is working with your loved one, because there's a lot of information to give. And it's, you know, a constant process of updating and making sure that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
Well, certainly an important study and an important episode. You can listen to the full episode by visiting our website, broadcastretirementnetwork.com, or of course, any streaming service or podcast service. And that wraps up this episode of BRN Sunday. Have a topic of interest? Someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.